We did a lot of research this offseason, how we wanted to handle the bye, looked at different teams that performed well after the bye, and adjusted to a similar schedule.
They went to Lumen Field and Murray wasn't healed, but McCoy grabbed the wheel. The Seahawks were done. They're taking off the week, a little stuff to tweak. They're first place in the league with 9 games they won. I don't know what is in store, but you can't deny they've never been this good before heading to a bye. They were destined to break through. Now they are sitting at 9-2. If Murray's healthy, limit is the sky after bye, bye, bye. The final stretch will be stiff, but I feel comfortable with Vance and Cliff. This might sound crazy, Super Bowl's inside after bye, bye, bye.
All right, it's Jarrett Carlin's latest musical offering. We haven't done this before either. I'm putting you guys on the spot. Sarah, Bick, myself, we each get like 10 seconds to make a joke, and then we'll move on.
My joke is not a joke. It's an observation. I just always marvel when these songs go on. Jarrett is back there dancing to them like they're actually good.
Like, yeah, like, what's this? New radio song?
Right.
Sarah? To be fair, I was dancing too because NSYNC, Bye Bye Bye, I will never not dance to that.
Right.
So Jarrett,
right.
I will not insult you today.
All right, so maybe we can employ this in the future. My joke is that was by the boy band Out of Sync.
Oh, no! That's well done. That's good.
Your creativity and your lyrics, A-plus as always.
Yes.
Lyrically brilliant.
The delivery, just hot garbage.
You're like Bernie Taupin.
As far as other ones I've done, I didn't think that was that terribly
I would agree.
Performed.
I would agree.
I didn't go too far out of my, I didn't try to do anything too much there.
Yeah, well, you're no Justin Timberlake, so.
I'm Joey. Who no is? Joey Fat One.
Right.
You're Chris. Right.
That's
Chris
Kirkpatrick.
That's good. All right.
So, look, you wrote a column that's up now on ArizonaSports.com about the vibe, Lit City, this thing that you've given birth to. We talked about it on yesterday's show. We got a Phoenix Suns team off a trip to the finals, flexing their muscles again as one of the best teams in the NBA. Although there's room for improvement, we would all agree with that. The Cardinals are at the bye right now. They got the best record in the NFL. So I got curious, and I was like, what does that mean? If you're through 11 weeks and you're 9-2 and you have the best record in your conference in the league overall, what does that mean for your Super Bowl chances? Now, again, all teams are different. All scenarios are different. But from a historical perspective, I went back to 2000. So there's been 21 seasons in the NFL since that year. And I looked back at who had the best record after 11 weeks in each conference, each of those years. And I thought in embarking on this, it would show, being the best team in the NFL after 11 weeks has no bearing on your Super Bowl path. I didn't find that.
Wow.
In those 21 years, and maybe you'll view this differently, 8 times the team with the best record in their conference, either the AFC or the NFC, 8 times in 21 years won the Super Bowl. 5 times the Super Bowl featured the 2 best teams in each conference through 11 weeks. 4 times the Super Bowl featured neither team with the best record through 11. Only 4 times. So right now you got Tennessee in the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Cardinals in the NFC. They are atop their respective divisions. So looking at it just by conference, in the NFC, 12 out of 21 years, a team that had the best record or tied for the best record after week 11 made it to the Super Bowl. That's happened 9 times in the AFC. So you're looking right around 50% historically.
Yeah.
Again, you have to consider everything.
Right.
And the Cardinals might be in better shape than a lot of those teams through 11 weeks because they got their best players coming back from injury.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so that's interesting data. So because it illustrates a couple of different things. It can be done, and it's also wise to expect some more rumbling, some changes moving forward down the stretch. And I think this is one of the things you do. As a Cardinals fan, you live your lives in a bubble, and you look at their schedule, and you start looking, okay, have to win that. Wow, that's a big game. And you forget that other teams are in the midst of a lot of big games themselves. And every week when we put together and look at the schedule and examine the schedule, it sort of reinforces that there is going to be a lot of movement. There are going to be teams that the Cardinals are vying with that are going to lose football games. It's just a matter of, is this Cardinals team good enough to really close the deal on a number one seed and a Super Bowl run with it being their first time? And in the piece I wrote today, that to me, if you had to choose between what team do you think is going to get a title first, the Suns or the Cardinals, that's the big advantage for the Suns. They've been there before. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals have not. The next playoff game Kyler Murray plays will be his first. Same with Cliff Kingsbury. We don't know how either of those guys are going to react. They might be great, or they might need to experience it first.
True. But again, and there's just similarities. It doesn't make it true, but we wondered those same questions about the Suns last year.
We did.
Monty Williams making his first trip as the head coach. This team and a lot of the key players, young players, making their first trip to the to the playoffs. They made it all the way to
Chris
the finals.
Paul never making it to the finals before got through.
Yes.
Yeah. So it can be done if you've got the right blend of guys. And I think that in the case of the Phoenix Suns, what you saw the pedigree of Chris Paul. You saw a guy in Devin Booker who was more than ready for the moment, who had been waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had advanced beyond. Further than the moment, and it showed. And then DA playing out of his mind for most of the postseason, which none of us expected.
Sure.
So that's, you know, I'll be curious really to see how this football team handles this, how Kyler Murray handles this stuff. When I think about the playoffs and I think about big football games in front of the Cardinals, you know this, in the big games in the NFL, there's a difference in the speed of the game from preseason to regular season, from regular season to playoffs, from playoffs to Super Bowl. It's all about the intensity. It's all about the energy. It's all about the adrenaline. But guys actually do play faster. Mm-hmm. Can Kyler Murray calibrate that on the fly? Because Kyler Murray, we know that. He needs to know the calculus. He needs to be on top of the speed of the game calculus. Can he calibrate
it?
Yeah,
it changes.
So can he now go, okay, I got to be a little quicker because it's coming at me quicker. Can he see it when it's coming at him quicker?
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to see.
But in doing this research, too, you're constantly reminded of how things can change very quickly. If you go back just a year ago, the Pittsburgh Steelers started 11-0, didn't win a playoff game. Things changed for them drastically down the stretch of the season. In these 21 years, the Cardinals have only had the number one record in their conference after 11 weeks one time. They were 9-1 after 11 weeks in 2014. And they ended up having to start Ryan Lindley at quarterback in a playoff game in Carolina. And they were not a playoff team really at that point
because
they had no offensive firepower. So things can change, but there's a lot of examples over the last two decades of teams that have been at this point where the Cardinals are at and followed it through to a trip or a Super Bowl
title.
That's
a great point, because maybe that is what is behind the acquisition of this number three quarterback. Maybe they look back at 2014 and said, you know what? We can't let that happen. We can't get to a point where the yo-yos on the radio are clamoring for Kurt Warner to come back.
But, I mean, do we have any proof that Trace McSorley is an upgrade over Chris Trevor?
No,
at this
not
point?
Yet.
Not at the pro level. Coming up next, college football. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty, and the college football playoff rankings were released yesterday, Cincinnati included. We'll talk college football with Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic next. Pickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Broadcasters of your area in voluntary cooperation with federal, state, and local authorities this system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency.
Dan Pickley, Vince Murata.
Pickley and Murata Mornings.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
That's the Wednesday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios. College football becoming more and more important at this point as we get closer and closer to the college football playoffs. The new rankings were released last night. Here to talk about college football with us, senior writer from The Athletic, Nicole Auerbach, joins us here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Good morning, Nicole. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
With the rankings out, I think two things people are reacting to with the new rankings. Obviously, that was Ohio State jumping over Alabama after their thrashing of Michigan State, and a non-Power 5 team finally cracking the top four in Cincinnati. What was your biggest takeaway from what we saw revealed last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think there wasn't much to be that upset about. I think they did the right thing in putting Cincinnati at the number four spot. Obviously they were sitting at five. They said they were rock solid a week ago, and then the third team in their rankings gets demolished. So it makes total sense. So I was glad to see that, even though obviously Cincinnati can still be jumped, they do deserve where they are in the context of this season. And then, I felt like Ohio State, when you look at the resume and the way that they've been playing, they did deserve the spot above Alabama. And not to say that just, like, it should matter about recency bias, because Ohio State, finally played a really, really complete game. We saw how dominant they can be. But also just that, like, when the committee, it does come into play, because the committee is trying to pick four teams that will give us three good games. And obviously we've seen a ton of blowouts in the semifinals, but they're not trying to do that. Like, they do want teams that are playing well at the end of the season. And Alabama has looked pretty shaky these last few games, even though they've won games. Plus, some of this stuff is going to shake itself out. Like, Alabama's going to play Georgia next week in the SEC championship game. And, we'll learn a lot more from there. So it doesn't really matter, but I do think what it signals, I think, is good, because, Ohio State has had these opportunities down the stretch in the last few weeks to play, good teams in the Big Ten that the committee has a lot of respect for. And the resume does look different. We just haven't seen them compared directly to Alabama because of the Oregon buffer. So I was good with that as well. So I think they did a good job at the top. If they hadn't flipped Michigan to Michigan State for no reason, we probably would be feeling like pretty solid about them overall the last few weeks as a committee.
Nicole, I think you've done you have been doing a great job covering college football, because you have a great amount of skepticism for the sport and what they do, and I love that because I think it's right on the money. How confident are you that Cincinnati can stay there? Because to me, I watched Cincinnati. I've seen them play three times this year. They look legit. Now, can they win a playoff game? I don't know about that, but they look like they deserve to be in that conversation. Do you think that at the end of it all, they can stay where they're at?
I think so, because I think if the committee was really, really opposed to the idea of it, I don't know if they would have put them here, right? Like, what they could have done is try to justify Michigan above Cincinnati or something this week, right? If they really, really didn't want to do it. But if they just stay undefeated, and the committee has felt that right now, with the resume that they've had, which everyone has admitted, not the strongest, doesn't have a ton of Power 5 competition, but if they say right now that it's better than, Michigan, and it's better than Notre Dame, who they beat, like, those are things that they're going to have to think about in 2 weeks, right? Or in a week, or however many days until the final ranking, because they're already saying it now with that resume. And, one thing I thought that was interesting was, like, yeah, the win over Notre Dame, like, continues to get better and better. And we were like, yeah, we know. It's been top 10 win all along, but right now it's a top 6 win. And so it's little things like that. And I think, again, the way that they played really well, we're really dominant against SMU. Like, this is why you talk about style points, because that stuff does matter to the committee, which is trying to, again, be like, can these guys hang? And, like, we all know, yes, they can. We've seen it. But, that's what the committee is trying to decide. So I think, yes, I do think probably the biggest threat right now, there's a couple different ways. One is if Alabama upsets Georgia, because they both would get in. So that would steal a spot. But then I also think the Big 12 champion, and probably the most straightforward way to have the biggest threat would be Oklahoma State winning out, winning Bedlam, and then winning the Big 12 title game. They would be one loss Big 12 champ. They would have, two top 10-ish wins in the last 2 weeks. They already have a win over Baylor. Like, that would be a really strong resume. Like, they're one of the few teams that has actually, like, a lot they could gain in the next 2 weeks and could get them in the mix. But I just think those are really the scenarios, because Ohio State and Michigan are going to play each other. If Georgia wins handily over Alabama, you know, that should take care of that. And Notre Dame, they beat head-to-head. I cannot see an undefeated team not getting the spot over one lost team that they beat, right? So it's really the Big 12 race and Alabama that Cincinnati fans or fans of anyone in the sport that want to see them make it, that's who you've got to be worried about.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic, our guest here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. About Georgia, I think everybody who watches the sport would agree they're clear-cut number one. They've been dominant this year. But my question about Georgia, and it might come into play not this week against Georgia Tech, but in that SEC championship game, Nicole, is do they have enough quarterback/offense to get it done? Stetson Bennett has done a nice job in filling in, but I kind of view him as a caretaker and relying on the defense. The scenario changes when you get into the playoffs. You got to score enough points. Do you think they can do that with Stetson Bennett at QB?
Well, I think they've made the decision that they were going to. I think it was clear that they could have, gone back to JT Daniels or, you know, made a choice. And, it wasn't just a health-related issue. And I do think that they like what Stetson Bennett brings to the offense. Obviously, you know, he's done an incredible job with different receivers and guys have been hurt. He's used his legs and hasn't been afraid to. And that's been actually an important wrinkle to their offense. But that's really the big question, and this is where it's going to get interesting because they just really haven't played teams that have stressed the defense, and also, like, they haven't played any great defenses really since Clemson, you could argue, in the opening game. And now we know, you know, how good Clemson's defense was, but they didn't have an offensive touchdown in that game. That was JT Daniels as well, but, like, We need to see them get stressed in both areas. And Alabama's a flawed team. This isn't like a vintage Nick Saban Alabama team, but great offense, great quarterback, great skill players. And so putting that pressure on the Georgia defense in a way we haven't seen this year. And then like a pretty solid defense, a bend but not break, you know, like that they can make some plays. It's, you know, we'll see. Like that'll be an interesting challenge for Stetson Bennett. So I think that game will determine, you know, I think the way everyone's been talking about Georgia is like the heavy favorites to win national championship. Like, well, we'll see in that SEC title game,
yeah,
you know, if that's true or if there are going to be teams that can put some stress. Like, if you did end up having a matchup with Ohio State's offense, like, is that a real problem for Georgia, right? Yeah. Like, we haven't really thought that way in a while, so I feel like we need Alabama as a measuring stick to see exactly what this team looks like when there's a little bit of pressure on them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think there's a lot of pressure on them to be that team from Georgia that finally breaks through. So I was talking to somebody last night, and he said, you know what they would love more than anything? They would love Michigan and Ohio State to play a classic and then for Alabama to beat Georgia and then to have that be the Final Four. Basically, a rematch with those big brands. So here's my question to you. How severe is the problem of rewarding brands over teams that deserve it, and how soon can we get that expanded playoff to solve this issue?
Well, it's a real problem, but I think, you know, we have only really seen it happen in a couple of cases. Like, I do think Alabama starting this season in the rankings at number two, even though they had a loss, you know, is an example of this. Ohio State and Alabama making it in years where they weren't champions, you know, is a reason of this. But it's almost really not that they're always getting the benefit of the doubt, but that it's always the same teams in general. And like there, a lot of these seasons, like they've absolutely earned it. And then there's been times where they do get the benefit of the doubt. So we just end up with the same few teams over and over and over again. And that's what's not great for the health of the sport. You know, in terms of timing, we'll know more. There's the December 1st meeting in Dallas with all the commissioners again. They really need to decide, probably at that meeting, but certainly by the end of this calendar year, if they can get to an agreement on the size and the format and take it to the presidents and get that approved, because if they can do it by the end of this year, they'll be able to implement it for the 2024 season.
Yeah.
And if they don't do it by the end of this year, it'll be 2026.
Ugh.
So again, this season was fun. There were a lot of upsets. We're still talking about a lot of the big bloods, the blue bloods at the end of the season. So I think ASAP is the goal, but, you know, you need to get – these things need to be unanimous. But, yeah, 2024 would be the earliest that this could get fixed, and we could be talking about 25 teams this time of year, people having lots of real chances to make this thing and lots of Cincinnati's, at least starting the season, believing there's a path.
Yeah. Nicole, thanks so much for the time and the insight. We really appreciate it. Happy holidays.
Absolutely. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Thank you. Nicole Auerbach, senior writer for The Athletic, joined us on the 72 Sold Sportsline. Get your price at 72sold.com. We'll get rebooted with Sarah Cazell. Rush Hour Reboot straight ahead. Spickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American-dreamed Brooklyn Betting.
All right, welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot. On Bickley and Marotta Mornings, I am Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta, and Jared Carlin. We're taking you through the biggest stories of the day Indeed. And the rest of the week as this will be our final show for the
Let's
week.
Let's get some Friday energy up in here.
Let's go. The
Sports
Wednesday
kebab.
Shenanigans with the Friday frivolity. Yeah.
Write some jokes, clown. Sorry,
clowns
Sarah,
don't
go
like jokes.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
There you go.
All right, let's get into it. The Cardinals heading into their bye week, 9-2, the best record in the NFC and the NFL. But they've not been without their share of injuries this year, which I think is what makes it all the more impressive that they have 9 wins. Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, Rodney Hudson, Justin Pugh, and Chase Edmonds on offense all throughout the season have dealt with some pretty severe injuries. J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones, Byron Murphy Jr., etc., on defense. Now, Cliff Kingsbury told Wolf and Luke this week that the Cardinals' bye is coming at the perfect time so they can all heal up and get ready for the final stretch of the regular season.
It appears so. We have a lot of guys who have some things that we got to get healed up and try to get them feeling better before we play these last 6. So hopefully the next 2 weeks will be huge as far as that goes, guys. Rejuvenating and recharging and getting ready to finish up this stretch run.
All right, Dan and Vince, given all of the injuries that this team has dealt with, which side of the ball have you been more impressed with in how they've held up this year, the offense or the defense?
Ooh. I'm going defense.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too.
Why?
Can make an argument for both. Go back to the beginning of the season, the expectations put on the defense, especially in the secondary. That's where I look.
Oh, yeah.
Where we went into the season with a lot of questions about the secondary, the questions
Butler.
List grew when Malcolm Butler decided to tap out. And, you know, here they are, and it hasn't been perfect. I mean, if you look at Marco Wilson's Pro Football Focus grades, they're not great. He's one of the lowest-rated corners in the league, according to their metrics. But it hasn't been exploited to the point where it's concerning on a weekly basis. So I'll start there. You lose J.J. Watt, and the pass rush continues to thrive. That, to me, and again, it's a tip of the cap to Vance Joseph and the job that he's done.
I think what Vinny says, I go back to the Malcolm Butler deal, the depth at secondary, what we saw in that preseason game against the Chiefs, and it all rolled into one for me, and it really knocked down my optimism level going into the season. The fact that the defense has stood up for the most part, I think was a bigger question mark than the offense performing. And I think that secondary has held up really well. I think Isaiah Simmons has become that guy. And more than anything, the Chandler Jones and Jordan Hicks putting selfish interests aside and continuing to ball out for this team. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is very impressive. But they're close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, let's talk some college football. The Territorial Cup on Saturday in Tempe. I believe it's a 2 o'clock kick from Sun Devil Stadium. Here is ASU's Herm Edwards yesterday talking about the opponent, Arizona, and what he sees from this one-win squad.
When you watch these guys on tape, they're very competitive group. Now, they play hard. They really do. They play hard. They've got them playing hard. And they've got some good players. They've got some good players. And so a game like this, doesn't matter what the records are. We know what this thing's about, and our players will know, especially the young ones, the freshman kids we have. They kind of understand, but I think the more they learn about the rivalry of this thing, the better.
They're about to learn. All right, what happens in this game on Saturday? I know we talked about it a couple segments ago as far as ASU clearly being the more talented and better prepared team, but do you expect that they will win with ease?
I'm not even going to go as far as say they're better prepared. We've had that conversation over and over and over again. The talent disparity is pretty vast, but I think ASU wins, but I think it's also a feeling that even though it's a win over your rival, it is a game that will leave a lot of Sun Devil fans wanting more.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah, so that speaks to whether or not this game is the consolation prize that it once was. When the whole stated objective of this regime was to be a top 15 program, you are in effect saying quit valuing a rivalry game as much as you do. Look for bigger prizes, if you will.
Yeah.
So I wonder exactly how much consolation comes out of it. I think ASU prevails on talent. I don't think it's going to necessarily be close.
Mm-hmm. As far as the consolation prize, though, if Arizona were somehow able to pull this off, that would make their entire year.
Oh, there's no doubt
in a day.
About it.
Which,
we'll have
no
more
question.
On that. There's thoughts on that side of it, too. I think this, for a lot of those reasons, this particular matchup is fascinating. If not, it's not important, really, in the grand scheme of things, but it's fascinating.
Sure. It's important to us, though. It's important to me. All right. Herm Edwards, fired, retired, or back next year? What's going to happen after this game?
B, retires. That's what I think is going to happen. I think that I think what's coming to the program is not going to be good. I know that the high-profile boosters are not at all happy, both with the athletic director and the head coach. As I said earlier, if there's going to be a firing, it's going to have to come from the school president. I don't think Ray Anderson's going to pull the plug on his guy. Because that would just not be how friends operate. So I think that...
Friends, yeah.
Yeah.
Keyword.
Retire.
Which, I'm leaning towards that too, but that opens up a whole new can of worms. Herm Edwards Sunday says, all right, you know, considering everything, I'm out. I appreciate the opportunity. That leaves the entire staff remaining intact. What do you do then?
That's true.
Can you give the reins to Antonio Pierce, who's at the center of this whole investigation?
No, you can't.
That's a great point.
I don't know.
That is a great point.
I know U of A is looking for a defensive coordinator, though.
They are.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine that?
No, I actually can't.
No. Well, the Wildcats need a defensive coordinator, as Vinny said.
Well,
the great Don Brown is gone.
The funny thing about that is, has any coach ever gotten a head coaching job coming from a worse team?
Probably not.
I mean, that is I know there's has the history with UMass, but I thought that was just such a weird hire.
Yeah.
Considering bad
he is well respected in college football, though.
That's his home. They already knew him. Finally, let's squeeze this in. The college football playoff rankings came out last night. Georgia number 1, Ohio State number 2, Alabama number 3, Cincinnati cracks the top 4. Do you guys think this will actually be the first group of 5 team to make the playoff? Or will the committee somehow find a way, assuming that Cincy wins out, will the committee somehow find a way to backtrack when it's really time to pick that final 4?
I think they're going to backtrack. beyond the shadow of a doubt, it's very easy, although it hasn't happened before, it's very easy to elevate one of those group of 5 teams into the top 4 when there's 2 more rankings to come out.
That's true.
When it's all said and done after the conference championship games, and Cincinnati's going to play East Carolina this week, that's a win. And then they'll play probably an undefeated Houston team in the AAC championship. I don't think it's going to be enough to convince the majority of the committee members to put them in the top 4.
Yeah, sadly, I agree with Vinny. And as I mentioned to Nicole Orbach, I was talking to somebody who said, watch what happens if Michigan-Ohio State is a classic and Alabama beats Georgia or that game is close. They might just run that back because that would be the dream college football playoff for the powers that. If you want brands,
well,
Georgia, Bama, Michigan, Ohio State, and then get them opposite of each other so they're not rematches.
But you have to be a little bit more specific. It's got to be a Michigan Ohio State classic that Michigan wins.
That's right.
Right.
Yes. That is true.
And that's not what it's been in recent history.
No. I think it's going to be Ohio State, Michigan State all over again is what I think is going to happen on Saturday.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, guys.
Rush Hour Reboot every morning is at 7:30 as we get you caught up on the big stories of the day through a different lens. Coming up next, who's going to be coaching the Chicago Bears when the Arizona Cardinals visit them a week from Sunday? That seems to be a question. That and more NFL next. Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
Yeah, Cardinals off this week. When they resume, it'll be a road game at frigid Soldier Field in Chicago to take on the monsters of the Midway, the Chicago Bears. There was a weird report that came out yesterday concerning the Chicago Bears. They get ready for a game tomorrow in Detroit, the Thanksgiving Day game against the Lions. A report circulated that said Matt Nagy was going to be fired after the game tomorrow against the Lions.
Yeah.
Nagy was asked about it at the at a press conference yesterday, and he said, that is not accurate. He said when asked whether he had received assurances he would keep his job moving forward, his response was, quote, my focus is on these players in Detroit, and that's it. That's my job as a head coach and a leader is to do that. These players have been amazing. They've been great, blah, blah, blah. We were talking about this off the air, and this is not something that you see in pro football at all. When when an axe falls on a coach, it falls. It's not like, okay, at the end of the year, you can figure this out. There's never really any announcement or warning that it's coming. The Bears have never fired a coach midseason.
Never.
Ever. But I also found it weird that it was a report that surfaced from, and I'll be completely honest with you, I had no idea what this website was until I looked it up, patch.com, which is kind of like a local news aggregator site. But somebody from that site wrote this up, and it got all the way to the press conference podium with Matt Nagy.
Right. Yeah, somebody, and this person who wrote this did an interview and said, listen, I'm not in your space. I'm not in the sports media space. I just have a really good source on this. Sort of like Jordan Schultz breaking the Robert Sarver story.
Look, Jordan Schultz is more connected than anybody from Patch.com.
Well, that is true. Yeah, that is true. So to me,
like your aunt on Facebook breaking the story.
That's much closer.
This is, yes, this is, so what's funny about this is, well, not funny. Bears fans want him gone. He's a dead man walking regardless. At the end of last week's game, they were literally chanting, fire Matt Nagy. Yeah, right. So,
yeah.
So this.
I didn't know you had that sound.
Sounds like they couldn't decide if they were going to do fire Matt Nagy or fire Nagy.
Yeah.
Fire
Nagy. Yeah. So
just like the Bears.
But think about this. Think about how weird when you talk about intersecting narratives in the NFL. Think about how weird that would be if the Cardinals have to deal with the Bears team in that position with a new guy, a new voice, bringing new energy to that game.
Mm-hmm.
Some rando special teams coach who just gets the here's the interim shot of a lifetime.
There you go. So that's something to watch for the Cardinals moving forward and the Bears. Look, he's been under fire for quite some time. There's some people who thought he would be let go in the offseason, even though they made the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago at Detroit, Vegas at Dallas tomorrow, another team dealing with some strife, if you will.
Yeah.
Cowboys have their traditional home game against the Raiders. They will not have Amari Cooper, the wide receiver, who missed last week's game with Kansas City as well. And the way the schedule fell with two games within close proximity of each other, Sunday and Thursday, the reason why he's missing both games is because he tested positive for COVID-19 and is in the protocol as an unvaccinated player, which has a lot of people, including former Cowboys wide receiver Michael Irvin, up in arms. Who was caught up with by TMZ as he was walking in to do a television show. And he said he's hot about it, and he talked about how your job as an athlete is to mitigate, or as a football player, is to mitigate any chance. Don't give your team any reason not to make the Super Bowl. So he's pissed at Amari Cooper about it. Is that fair?
I don't know. I really don't. To me, this is such a slippery slope, and Jerry Jones and Michael Irvin are deeply vested Cowboys, and they see this chance to win, and they saw what happened to their team last week when CeeDee Lamb went down and when Ezekiel Elliott got hurt, and now here's your other good wide receiver who's going to miss a couple of games because he's not vaccinated, and you're at that point in the season where all of these games are very, very meaningful. This is the real consequences to making an individual decision in a team sport. And this is where it gets slippery, because the more and more science comes out that says, look, this is safe, the more and more people say, okay, why are you not taking it? That's why with Joe Flacco, I'm not telling you why. It's my choice. Okay.
That's exactly the case, and you can be frustrated all you want, and
right.
I have my personal stance on it. I'm vaccinated.
Right.
I chose to do that. But Here's where it gets fuzzy for me. When the criticism is coming from a guy like Michael Irvin, who played on very successful Super Bowl championship teams. But you're telling me that during his career, Michael Irvin did nothing to jeopardize his availability to his Cowboys teammates?
That he didn't put foreign substances in his body?
In 1998, there was a fight over a barber's chair that Michael Irvin was involved with Everett McIver.
He was out of control.
It involved scissors.
Yes, I remember that.
Jerry Jones had to pay off Everett McIver for his silence.
Oh, I forgot about that story.
Michael Irvin's career was punctuated by individual decisions that had nothing to do with a pandemic or vaccination that put his team in jeopardy of not having his services.
Yeah, okay, I gotcha. Yeah, so there's a lot to be said for that. I agree with you. It's just we're at that state of the season now where this kind of stuff is very, very influential. And this is why these things for the unvaccinated, this is part of what you have to accept. Okay. If you choose not to get vaccinated, that's fine. Okay. If you come out and say, well, I don't trust that. I don't want to put that in my body. That's not what the science tells you. The science tells you this is safe. So you're making a decision based on bad information, in my opinion. But still, it's your choice. That choice comes with consequences, and part of those consequences now are the incredibly hot criticism that will come from letting your team down at this point in the season.
Well, you don't think that there's some players who have been famously put on the unvaccinated list? Kirk Cousins, Minnesota, Carson Wentz of Indianapolis.
Yep.
Their teams are somewhat resurgent and trying to get into the playoffs. You don't think that they're just crossing their fingers right now?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Because, again, the protocols and the whole process is different for the unvaccinated players. So you're getting into late November, early December now.
That's exactly right. So now it's one thing to be out for 10 days in September. Your football team can probably overcome that, and people are not going to be as mad at you because there's a lot of the season left. But now, you know, these are big games for the Cowboys to be playing. That
Absolutely.
Chiefs game, that bothered Jerry Jones. That bothered Michael Irvin. That this team is trying to win meaningful games with injured players, and Amari Cooper's now going to miss two games. So, yeah. This is, you're right. The stakes have been raised.
Yep. There you go. There's some NFL hash marks going on. Coming up next, the halfway point of the Wednesday show prior to Thanksgiving. Bick's got your blast next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.